All right, this is KPFK, Los Angeles, KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. I'm Davey D.
And I'm Sonali Kohutkar.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Davey, and I hope everyone out there listening is doing well and aware that we are about to, in about half an hour, go to a live panel of the governor recall candidates.
Yeah, and there's quite a few people that's already here in the audience. For people who are listening, both in L.A. and the Bay and Fresno, what we have is a large gathering primarily of journalists of color, both in the mainstream as well as the quote-unquote alternative press, from up and down the state, representing pretty much about every ethnic group that you can think of is here this morning, ready for the debate. And I already seen Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante walking around. I seen some of Arianna Huffington's people. Tom McClintock, believe it or not, pulled out at the last minute. So that's something that is a breaking development. And also, I wasn't surprised that he did that, considering the audience might be perceived as not being one to immediately align themselves with his particular positions, meaning that he's so conservative. But I think he should have stepped into place anyway if he wants to govern all the people of California.
Absolutely, especially since the latest poll shows that he is slightly increasing in popularity. And, of course, then the other two, let's just say, white male candidates, they just happen to be that Arnold Schwarzenegger and Peter Ueberroth, didn't agree to be on the panel, which is, of course, also too bad. But I think it's going to be an exciting panel. We have Cruz Bustamante, who is the leading candidate in the polls, Peter Camejo and Arianna Huffington, the two leading independents, although Camejo is certainly aligned with the Green Party.
You know, one of the things that kind of comes to mind is I'm looking at these polls that come out, and I don't know what the science is behind them, whether or not they're accurate, or even if we should just be tossing out the numbers, you know, Cruz is leading Arnold, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. if that already starts to shape opinions. But one of the things that I kept thinking about on the way over here is that you have two very progressive candidates, and a lot of people listening in our audience would probably find themselves left or center and in that category, progressive or you know, at least on the Democratic side of things, at the very least. And so I keep wondering whether or not the progressive message is resonating outside of the circle of the people that we normally would broadcast to, and if not, why not, and what's it going to take?
I think actually it is resonating. What's really interesting about this recall itself is that before even the recall has happened, we've seen, for example, the incumbent governor, Gray Davis, already making decisions that progressives have been hoping that he would make for years. He has vetoed bill after bill on, for example, the licenses for illegal immigrants. He's now signed that. There have been issues that have been important to people left of center that Gray Davis realizes he absolutely has to capitulate on if he wants to please voters. And at the very least, this recall is putting forward some very, very important measures that I think can at least put those issues out into the arena. But I think you're right that there are some other, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Arianna Huffington and Peter Camejo and some of the other candidates are getting the center stage. You know, we've got the Terminator, basically, drawing millions of crowds.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say. And for people that's just tuning in, we are broadcasting live from the Bob Hope Patriotic Theater in downtown Los Angeles. We're on KPFK in L.A., KPFA in Berkeley, KFB in Berkeley as well, and KFCF in Fresno. For people who don't know, this theater that we're in was the home of the Shadow Convention during the Democratic Convention in 2000. So I remember actually being on this stage and coming down here. But, you know, I wanted to go back to the point that you made that somebody like Governor Davis is now you know, at least paying some sort of attention to issues that have been important to people in the progressive side of things. The problem I have with it is that it goes back to what I was saying. Do people perceive that as an issue that is from the progressive side of the political spectrum, or does it become something that Governor Davis starts to own? You know, it's like, oh, or do they marginalize his positions, as I've heard? You know, some people will start to criticize and say, oh, he's just wacky by, you know, passing this bill that would let people get the licenses, you know, so.
I think from the perspective of, for example, the illegal, I shouldn't even say illegal, undocumented working community, or those people who are tied to that community, or who were at one point undocumented and realized the importance and the necessity of having a driver's license, they're saying that Gray Davis has finally done the right thing. They're not happy. They realize that he's doing it to use them. They're realizing that that they're being used as a you know, to get political points among an rapidly increasing immigrant community here in Los Angeles and, of course, all throughout California. So at some level, I think, you know, I'm not sure whether we're getting a real debate on the issues out on the air, but at the very least, I think people are realizing that these are important issues. If Governor Gray Davis wants to win points, he's going to have to sign these bills that he normally doesn't sign.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of good in a way that Tom McClintock and maybe some of the other conservative candidates don't show up, because maybe with Ariana and Peter Camejo being present, their presence will be felt more, and it will be very interesting to see how Cruz Bustamante, the leading Democratic candidate, who probably has been advised that if he really wants to be the governor of the state of California, he was probably being encouraged to move to the center, if yes. He will be forced to really flank himself over to the left and try to compete with Ariana and Camejo. So it will be real interesting to see how those issues start to fall into place during this debate, which should be starting in about 15, 20 minutes. You know, one of the things that I've been concerned about is that as we look at this recall, I'm wondering if these candidates have identified issues that would be important to young people of color in particular, and whether or not they're just going to give lip service to it, or whether or not they're really going to try and embrace those type of issues that are important. You know, housing. How can you afford a house in California? It might be something that some people are thinking about. How can we decrease the amount of prisons that are being built and put more money into schools and higher education so we could at least learn a trade or something to afford living in California?
I think part of that lies with this issue of politicians realizing that they have to please voters and the people who are most traditionally going to vote. It's definitely true that we don't, you know, young people and people of color aren't able to make vast donations of millions of dollars to their campaign coffers, so they become less important, of course, for the politicians.
But they have people power.
Absolutely.
There are more young people in the state than there are, you know, any other population.
And I think that's where the issue of Prop 54 becomes really important, where you see a lot of people realizing that Proposition 54, which is going to be a major issue in today's panel, is the proposition that would require the state to not keep any statistics based on racial information anymore. And of course, this would primarily affect people of color. You know, you wouldn't be able to keep track of how many people of color versus versus white folks are being sent into prisons, are being arrested, are being pulled over while driving, etc. And you've seen also, interestingly enough, a lot of the candidates not come out against it. Even Arnold Schwarzenegger coming out against Proposition 54, you know, definitely a very that's been sponsored by right wing.
When did he come out against it?
A few days ago.
Okay, because I had been calling, and he hadn't made up his mind. So that's an interesting development. What do you think about Cruz Bustamante saying that he's going to take a lot of his money that was questionable and now put that front and center? That has got to be a big boost for people that's against Prop 54.
Absolutely.
If he's able to start getting those commercials out there.
Absolutely, and I think that that in itself, Cruz Bustamante's support against, or Cruz Bustamante's position against Prop 54, as you know, the top two candidates in the race have come out against Prop 54, and with Bustamante's money that he has realized is probably, at least on the PR level, better to push on this, it's definitely probably going to defeat the measure. Even Ward Carnelly, the author of the bill himself, has realized that this is going to concede defeat. What's interesting, though, is that, again, we go back to polls, right? 50% apparently of those polled say that they support Prop 54, and something like 37% are against it. So you sort of look at, again, these are people who are voters, and these may not include the a large majority of the people who will be affected by Prop 54. And they're saying they want Prop 54. They may not understand what Prop 54 is. They may be being reactionary. And, so it's interesting to see how these candidates are going to juggle Prop 54 being against it and trying to woo voters who may actually be for 54.
You know, if you're just tuning in, we're broadcasting live from the Bob Hope Patriotic Theater in downtown Los Angeles, right here on South Figueroa Street, in case you're in the L.A. area, want to swing through and watch the debate, which should be starting in maybe about 15 minutes.
Is it open to the public?
Is it?
I'm not sure.
Well, heck, you
yes,
know,
it is.
I said
it
come
is.
Through and roll
We've
through.
Been told it is.
You know?
It is open to the public.
I mean, the candidates should definitely meet the folks. Let me ask you a quick question. You know, how have some of the candidates been resonating in other communities of color? Like, for example, I know last night Governor Davis went to Baldwin Hills, predominantly African-American neighborhood, did a town hall. And he made this promise, like, I'm going to come back twice a month, you know, and folks have been probably trying to get him for years, you know, whether or not that's lip service. But have you noticed the candidates aggressively going out to, say, the Arab American community, the Latino community, the various Asian communities, and trying to really connect with the issues of that are important to those respective communities?
Again, politicians are, it seems, you know, they seem to be following the standard strategy, which is to go after that voting bloc that's going to make the most difference to their campaign. So what I'm seeing is that a lot of the candidates are trying to woo the Latino community, which is the fastest growing immigrant community here in LA. It's definitely a very, very strong community, and that community could swing the vote. So, of course, they're pandering again to the community that can change, that can, you know, catapult them into the governor's seat. And they may be very well neglecting. I haven't seen them really go out and talk to and communicate with Arab American communities, who, after, of course, 9/11, have become probably the most vulnerable ethnic immigrant community in the United States.
You know, I know that there's been a lot of campaigning in the Valley.
Right.
In the Fresno area, and you know, all the way from Modesto, Sacramento, all those areas. And one of the things that's being said is that those areas are going to be crucially important, just because there's been a large population shift in terms of people leaving the Bay Area and LA to find cheaper housing. But also, as you mentioned, you know, large surging Latino community. The question is that Latino community leaning more to the right or the left, especially if everybody from Tom McClintock to Arnold Schwarzenegger to the Cruz Bustamantes and Davises are placating them at this point?
That's a really good question. And I think a lot of that not only depends on Prop 54, but also going back to 187, Proposition 187, which passed in 94 and then was overturned by federal court. We've seen, I believe it was McClintock, who said that if he were to be governor, he would bring back and enforce Proposition 187. This was not something that that rung very well with the Latino community. And then you see folks like Cruz Bustamante, who wins big points with the community by reaffirming his stand against 187. Arnold Schwarzenegger, it was recently revealed, had voted in 94 for 187. Whether he means to bring it back during his candidacy if he wins, he hasn't said. But certainly, you know, those sorts of issues around Proposition 187, which was such a crucial issue for the immigrant communities, is definitely a point of discussion, and I think is also going to be debated and discussed today.
You know, one of the things I wanted to go back to was we were talking earlier about a progressive agenda, and I was asking how come it might not be resonating outside of this progressive community. What do you think is the responsibility, especially for a lot of our listeners that are out there? Do we have a responsibility to go out and try to bring those issues so that they resonate above and beyond, so when an Ariana or Peter Camejo speak, it doesn't fall on deaf ears, or it's not unknown, it's not unfamiliar, since they're not getting the overwhelming press coverage, since they're not the sound bites on the 6 o'clock news? What is the responsibility of those who find themselves in the progressive community?
You know, Davey, that's of course a huge question, and I think that of course a big part of that question is alternative media itself. The crucial thing, of course, for getting any issues out are media coverage. That's why KPFK, KPFA, Pacifica Radio, and other alternative radio and alternative media, which are actually represented in today's audience are so important in getting those issues out. Yeah, I think it's the responsibility of the progressive community to bring out these issues. Hell, California even has one of the most accessible methods of bringing propositions to the ballot mm-hmm. that I think actually progressives don't take advantage of often enough, but there's so much apathy among young folks.
But even just to connect, and I'll give you an example, you know, last couple of weeks up in the Bay, I went down to the Grambling game, which was sold out. Huge football contest. Thousands of people, you know, had descended into South Bay. Didn't see any of the candidates. No flyers, nobody handing out anything, nobody meeting and greeting, saying this is who I am. Raider games, you know, when they played 49ers, again, nobody. And I'm looking at, the Cal football game. Again, 30,000 people, mostly young folks on a campus. Nobody there. And Art and Soul Festival, downtown Oakland, 100,000 people in 3 days. Only people I saw was the candidate, Peter Kanish. The presidential, Kanish.
Ah.
You know what I'm saying. So I only saw his folks, and forgive me for butchering the name. It's tip of tongue, and I can't get it. So to me, it's like, well, these are opportunities outside of having the alternative media that you would really hope, if not the candidates themselves, thank you.
Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich, yes. I'm sitting there like getting tongue-tied. But I would have hoped that at least the volunteers of the campaigns would have been out there meeting and greeting those ordinary, average citizens, you know, in the state of California who only get their sound bites from the 6 o'clock news, that this would be an opportunity to reach them. 50,000 people in one area, how do you overlook that?
You would think so. And so you're saying that a lot of the progressive candidates and even activists who are putting forward these progressive candidates aren't doing enough to reach people
outside
directly.
Of the circle. I mean, it would be interesting to see, you know, just using a football game, since there's so many people before, during, and after. If anybody will walk around and even just have a sign to say this is what's going on, pass out stuff on cars, you know, just to give people that information, since it's not being put forth in the public.
You know, I think one of the biggest issues here, I mean, this may seem like a cop-out for progressives, but, you know, we see this overwhelming apathy, especially apathy among young folks who just, you know, this recall election might be getting the hugest amount of coverage and hopefully the largest number of voters simply because people are excited about it and it's getting some press coverage. But otherwise, for example, last year when Davis won with a slim margin over Bill Simon, ultra-conservative Bill Simon, you had a very small percent. The majority of people did not turn out. And that's not because they don't necessarily care about the issues. We all know we all care about the issues. But it's perhaps because they don't feel engaged in the political process. So I believe it's our responsibility as progressives to figure out how we can get our issues put forward, not only through the electoral process, but outside the electoral system where, you know, the real change happens.
Well, you know, driving in today from, you know, from the Bay, you know, as I was getting off on, I guess it was like Sunset, I seen somebody, young guy, walking around with an Arnold Schwarzenegger shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And so I'm saying, I come back, and maybe this is just a rhetorical challenge and just tossing it out for all of us. What is our individual and collective responsibility to make sure that some of these progressive messages start to resonate outside our thing? If the candidates aren't doing it, then do we pick up the poster boards and make the flyers and go down to the local bar and pub and start to engage people, or at least start the process of familiarizing them so that when somebody does say, hey, you know, I want to reduce the number of police, or I want to, you know, maybe put a couple of more schools in place, or anything that we would think makes sense, it doesn't, you know, fall on ears and have the perception that folks have been trained to have that, oh, that's just some wacky Berkeley, you know, leftist issue that, you know, is going to take us under instead of putting us in the right direction.
Important questions, Davey. Maybe we should remind our listeners who we are and why we're here once more. But the panel will be starting in 10 minutes. I'm Sonali Kohatkar from KPFK Radio, joined by
Davey D of KPFA, Hard Knock Radio.
And we are here at Bob Hope Patriotic Hall, and this is a joint broadcast from KPFA KFK Los Angeles and KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and Pacifica Radio Live from Patriotic Hall. There are going to be a number of candidates from the governor's race, actually only three in the end. Cruz Bustamante, Arianna Huffington, Peter Camejo will be here. Tom McClintock has pulled out, and Schwarzenegger and Peter Uberoth have agreed not to come. And maybe, David, you can tell us who is going to question these candidates.
Well, the way this works, because of the setup, it's a large gathering of the people of color press, I guess is the best word, New California media, which frequently sponsors and puts on debates and makes the opportunity available for a lot of the independent and press and people of color journalists. And so I think they try to pick like one from each ethnic group to represent. And some of them will include Chauncey Bailey, who is now the owner of Soul Beat Television up in the Bay. So he will be here to represent the African-American community. He also writes a column for the Oakland Tribune. We have Gabrielle Lerner of La Opinion, which will represent the Hispanic print media. We have Jamal Dejani of WorldLink Television's Mosaic program. And Jamal will be representing the Arab American media. And I think that, I don't know who's going to be here for Univision, but we also have, I believe, J. Stone Shee from KTFF-TV in San Francisco.
And it looks like they're going to get ready to start soon?
Yeah, I think they're getting ready to get everybody situated. Emil Guerrero, the urban affairs writer for the Stockton Record and columnist for Asian Week, as well as the Philippine News, will be your moderator this morning. So this is what's going to be cracking down here. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking with local activist Fidel Rodriguez. We're also going to be talking to one of the person from the Peace and Freedom Party, C.T. Weber. We'll be joined by him after the debate to get some commentary and feedback. So we have a whole lineup in store for you. More importantly, I think this will be really good to hear what the candidates have to say, especially if they start to bring home some of those progressive issues. And I think it's good that the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and Peter Uberoth and Tom McClintocks aren't there, because then the message won't, you know, you won't, it will just be moved over.
Well, also, at the same time, though, had they been here, it would have been interesting to see how they would have responded in a room full of people who have different concerns from the usual folks that are supporting Arnold Schwarzenegger, Davis, and others. And it would have been interesting to see how they would have responded.
Well, I think McClintock's situation was very strategic. You know, maybe this is just me speculating, but I think right now there's a concern that he may be splitting the vote in the Republican side of the thing, and he may be trying to angle for some leverage. So right now he's on a bit of a roll, and so if he gets shown up at a place where people aren't really feeling him, you know, if he says something like, I support the death penalty, and people boo and it makes the 6 o'clock news,
right,
that might turn that momentum off. So it's probably, you know, hedging your bets and say, I just won't show up to a place like this, and just kind of keep that momentum going. You
and
know?
It seems interesting. I think that Republicans are sort of trying to figure out who to throw their weight behind. And there is pressure on a lot of the Republican candidates to withdraw in favor of one major candidate. And that one specifically, of course, being Schwarzenegger, since he commands the large percentage. But you know what's really interesting, Davey, is to see the sort of Republican jumping over and kind of dodging of the issues that come up when you have Schwarzenegger as their front runner. This is a man who has violated so many of the moral principles that the arch Republicans uphold. You know, his cavorting in his past, and his drug usage, his womanizing,
his
sexual
racial insensitivity.
His
there's a new report out now that was saying that when he was a bodybuilder, that he had he liked to use the N-word pretty prolifically,
yeah,
and was very degrading to a lot of African-Americans.
And Latinos. I've heard him, read about him making comments against Latinos. It's very sad.
One of the things that's interesting is with McClintock in the race, if he was to drop out, would that support go to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and would that suddenly put him in the lead, because they say they're effectively splitting that vote? As Arianna and Peter Camejo may be splitting the progressive vote.
Well,
you know, that's something to look at. And it would be interesting to see how that plays out, or how that is working itself out.
I think at this point, Arianna and Peter are commanding about 5% of the total vote, so they may not necessarily be splitting it. But I think McClintock definitely, you know, the Bill Simon felt pressure to withdraw, and his vote, his withdrawing has, I think, actually favored Schwarzenegger. It looks like they're about to start, Davey, and we have people taking their seats on the stage here. And we are situated behind the stage, or rather next to the stage. And it looks like the moderator is probably going to begin soon. I think that's Emil Guillermo, who
right.
is the person who will be moderating today.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, we are broadcasting, simulcasting up and down the state of California on KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. And we are broadcasting from the Bob Hope Patriotic Hall in Los Angeles.
So. And I really encourage listeners to please call all your friends right now. Tell them to tune in no matter where you're listening. This is a very, very important panel in a very important setting. You know, this recall election is hugely important for California. But very few places will you find a panel where candidates will be asked the hard questions, will be facing a room full of media who are almost entirely people of color.
Yes.
And so it's very crucial. And we're very proud, of course, to be broadcasting this on KPFK and KPFA through Fresno, Berkeley, down to LA. Let your friends know that that this is happening right now as you speak. We're broadcasting live. Tell them to tune in.
Hope we're not on CP time. Think we're on CP time for people to know, colored people time. Starts at 10:30. Everybody's like ready. No, we're gonna start in about 10 minutes. Give it another 10 minutes.
It's a few more minutes, I think, till 10:30, and it looks like they still have about a table to fill on the other side. The questions, Davey, as I understand it, they're going to be centering around Prop 54.
Mm.
And issues important to what they say ethnic minorities.
Right.
I think he said they're going to try to get the first question started by 10:37.
Okay. So we got a couple of minutes. Okay. So we'll see what happens. You know,
we're about four more minutes before 10:30.
Yeah, for folks that are listening, we're behind the stage, so we're kind of making sure and trying to see and make sure everything is A-okay.
And it's a buzz, a lot of people gathering here. And I think, you know, Davey, I wonder, how do you think, is the mainstream corporate media going to pay attention to a debate, to a panel like this?
Well, they're all here, so that's one thing.
Are the major media also
here? Yeah, they are all here. The major media is here alongside with all the journalists of color, so that will, so we'll see what happens. Okay. What do we have here?
It looks like we also, and we should also let listeners know that near the end, after the debate and the panel actually is over at 12, we will have a one-hour discussion featuring C.T. Weber, who is running for the Peace and Freedom Party. He's not here today on this panel, but he will be putting forward progressive issues as well. He's one of the other progressive candidates that's running. And we'll also be hopefully be able to take listener calls.
Yeah, we'll be doing that as well.
So that, you know, we can pay attention to what these folks are saying and then hopefully have a dialogue on some of these issues that are so crucial. It, you know, so much depends on who wins. My fear, Davey, just going back to Schwarzenegger again, is you've got this guy who's got this major star power. Everywhere he goes, people turn out in huge numbers just to see the Terminator.
Right. Well, that's strategic. And, you know, at first people were real critical when they were saying, well, he's not showing up to the debates. And even though I think that's a cop-out, it's also strategic, because what happens is when he shows up, everybody from all around the world comes through. And so then some of these other candidates get a chance to share in that limelight. So I think what he's hedging his bets on is to strategically not show up at a lot of these places and, you know, just kind of let people build their own audience, so to speak, and get their own media attention focused on him. And then he'll show up at the last one and... You know, and he'll do it in such a way where, you know, because he showed up, it's a big event, and then he'll do it close to the end. And
I think we should start calling him the Dodginator.
The Dodginator. I like that. It's not like he's not near here.
Dodging, yeah, dodging not only debates, dodging eggs, dodging questions.
But that's a strategy these days. And, you know, one of the things that we need to, I think about is, do we as people who are observing this, people who will be going to the polls on October 7th, also let me remind people, you have until the 22nd of September to register to vote if you haven't. Do we come up with a strategy for ourselves, for our respective communities, or you know, just as individuals in terms of how we look at this recall? For example, do we formulate a strategy to get more concessions out of, say, somebody like Governor Davis, who, you know, might be a sitting duck governor right now, or who's so desperate that he's willing to concede on major issues? Do we come up with a formula or a way to approach him to get some things? How do we hold accountable and push the button and get some leverage out of some of the people that are running now?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, for example, Governor Davis has constantly refused to allow women who are in prison because they killed their abusers, even though they've, you know, served their sentences. He refuses to let them go free. He has let many, many women who have had their parole.
Hello and welcome to this special recall campaign sponsored by the Greenlighting Institute and NCM, New California Media, featuring the state's top candidates for governor and members of California's ethnic media. My name is Emil Guillermo, a columnist for the mainstream and ethnic press, urban affairs writer for the Stock and Record, and a former host of NPR's All Things Considered. I'll be your host and moderator today. According to the 2000 census, communities of color represent 53% of the state's population. It's the reason the sponsor of today's debate is New California Media, a consortium of the state's ethnic media that has grown to become the statewide voice for those outlets and the communities they serve. For this debate, NCM has partnered with the Greenlighting Institute. And now Paul Turner of the Greenlighting Institute will say a few words. Paul?
Thank you, Emil, very much. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Paul Turner. I'm the National Director of the Claiming Our Democracy program at the Greenlighting Institute. For those of you not familiar with Greenlighting, we are a multi-ethnic public policy center whose mission is to empower low-income and minority communities towards economic and leadership development, civil rights, and other anti-redlining activities. I want to first of all thank the First American Title Insurance Company for underwriting the cost of this debate and for their commitment to ensuring that the voices of California's new majority is heard. We're delighted to join New California Media in co-sponsoring this, our second gubernatorial debate together. This recall debate here may be the most important in this election because it makes a profound statement that California's new majority want their issues addressed openly. We believe this debate can change the dynamics of the recall in terms of how many people come to the polls, who comes to the polls, and how they will vote. A minority turnout alone of 35% would be enough to give a candidate a winning percentage. We look forward to the candidates' explanation of their positions on issues pertaining to minority communities, especially Prop 54, and we look forward to them explaining their positions on this initiative. But not only this initiative, but also other issues like affordable housing, immigration, and the prison industrial complex, education and health care, all issues of very much of concern to minority communities. Now, all of the major candidates, plus the governor, were invited to participate in this debate. And we thank the candidates who are here, and we thank Bill Simon, who agreed to appear before he dropped out of the race. Mr. Simon and Green Party candidate Peter Cameo appeared in our debate last year. We are disappointed that all the major candidates for governor are not here, especially a front runner who says he doesn't want to participate in debates. Mr. Schwarzenegger has been given ample opportunity to demonstrate his ability to function without a script. His absence here today only increases suspicions regarding his grasp of the issues and his capacity to govern effectively. It can only be taken as an insult when a candidate says he wants to be the people's governor, yet refuses to engage in dialogue and genuine debate about the desires and concerns of California's communities of color. In the event that the governor is recalled, it's clear that the candidates on stage today will have a distinct advantage in the election. This recall also calls into question the need to genuinely reform California's system of elections, including reform of campaign finance and the initiative process itself. A system of public financing of campaigns would avoid the monopoly of wealthy candidates and the dependence of non-wealthy candidates on special interests. If California had a system of full public funding of election campaigns, there might not be a recall. And so with that, I just want to say we look forward to a compelling debate that will increase turnout and hopefully strengthen our democracy. Thank you and welcome.
Okay. And now for today's debate, scheduled for 90 minutes. All the top candidates, as Paul mentioned, based on previous polling, were invited. Governor Davis was invited. You heard Paul's explanation there. Mr. McClintock canceled at the last minute due to state business. Mr. Uberoth and Mr. Schwarzenegger did not respond to our invitation. We've left a place for Mr. Schwarzenegger because we are in Los Angeles, I suppose. With us today to debate the issues of California's ethnic communities are Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante, Green Party candidate Peter Cameo, and independent candidate Arianna Huffington. The candidates. Please let that be as long as applause for all the candidates until the end. Our format will be tightly formatted. Here it is. After the opening question from the moderator, there will be seven additional questions, one each, from our ethnic media panelists and myself. Our ethnic media panelists are Chauncey Bailey, Soul Beat TV, Jay Stone Shi of China Crosstalk, KTSF-TV San Francisco, Rolando Nichols of Univision, Jamal Dijon of Mosaic WordLink TV, Odette Keeley of ABS-CBN, the Filipino channel, and Gabriel Lerner of La Opinion. After each question, all candidates will have 60 seconds to answer. There will be two follow-ups per questions directed at any candidate. There will be then two direct rounds where I will call on each candidate to question a candidate whose name I will draw at random. There will be a 30-second question and a 60-second answer. The panel will then have a chance for one follow-up of any candidate. That candidate will have 30 seconds to respond. We will then have audience questions and additional questions from the panelists. Please fill out cards and submit your question. Please include your name and affiliation. Candidates will have 30 seconds to respond. We will conclude with 60 seconds for each candidate in a final statement. We begin with our first question from the editors of New California Media to all our candidates. California's electoral process is increasingly divided between voters who represent the state's aging, white, and affluent residents and non-voters, mostly young, multi-ethnic, multiracial, and not affluent. Is this a form of electoral apartheid? How do you plan to reverse this electoral apartheid through your candidacy? And we begin with Mr. Bustamante. 60 seconds.
The only way to be able to deal with this gap that's taking place is through education. People have been disaffected, and people feel as if somehow the politics in California have become so cynical that they don't believe that they have any impact. I think it's going to be very important that whoever becomes the next governor, whoever is in that position, is able to reach out not just to the mainstream voter, but to all voters and to all people. It is important. People's vote really is their voice in this democracy and in this government. And it's important for people to understand that that, in fact, is the only way to fully participate in California's government.
All right, Mr. Cameo.
Part of the problem we face is how people are discouraged from voting by the closeness of the choices that are provided. We need to open up our electoral system. We need so that people are free to vote for what they believe in. And the rest of the world has confronted this. Every country in the world has solved it, except the United States. In the first debate, I said if a party gets 20% of the vote, they should get 20% of the seats. How could anybody be opposed to that? That's representative democracy. The fact that we don't have that alienates people and they don't vote. We also have polls, like the poll published today. Those should be called white and rich people's poll. Because 45% of the people in California are Anglos. And in those polls, 80% of the people who are polled are white. And it discourages people. They don't know what our community thinks or wants. And, of course, there are some people that vote at every election. There's a lot of people alienated that don't, and they don't show up in the polls.
Time.
So the answer...
Go ahead. You can finish your sentence.
Okay. The answer is instant runoff voting. Give people the right to vote for who they want in proportional representation. That will open up the electoral
region. Thank you, Mr. Camillo. Ms. Huffington.
The greatest reason for the disaffection is the fact that big money is dominating the political process. And there is something we can do about that with the greatest respect to the lieutenant governor as candidates, not just if we're elected governors. Because how we run our campaigns sends a message to the voters. If we are beholden to big, powerful interests while we are running, the voters know that we are going to be beholden to the same interests while we are governing. Because our policy priorities are determined by those powerful special interests. And we see that again and again. And that's really why, as I've been going around colleges trying to register new voters to inspire disaffected ones, that's the message I'm getting back from them. Our vote doesn't matter. Our votes don't determine the policy priorities in Sacramento. Look at it again and again. Look at the prison guards unions getting a pay raise in the middle of a budget crisis. Look at the polluting companies being able to pollute because of the contributions
Time.
They've given.
Thank you, Ms. Huffington. Here's my follow-up address to Mr. Bustamante. You will have 30 seconds. Mr. Bustamante, among your record donations, you've taken millions from Indian casino interest, placed it in an old 2002 account, then used a loophole to transfer the money to this campaign. Even if it aids Native Americans, is your action ethical? Is it legal? And does it make disenfranchised young people more alienated and cynical of the politics that you may be a part of?
You know, I remember going to the reservations when I was a younger man. And seeing tribal members living in abandoned cars and in shacks, having 95% poverty, having high drug abuse and substance abuse issues on those reservations. This has been economic development for those tribal Indians. It's an important way for them to be able to reach and get their people out of poverty. And no, I'm very proud of the support that I've been able to get with them, with an association that I've had with them for over 20 years.
But is your action ethical and legal?
It absolutely is. In fact, one of my legal members, the team of the legal team that we put together, one of the attorneys had written Proposition 34 to ensure that we made sure that we not only followed the spirit, but the very letter of the law.
All right. A panel follow. Gabriel.
A question for Ms. Huffington. You criticize Lieutenant Governor Bustamante on the first debate about loopholes in election campaign election law. Would you favor public funding of election campaign that was mentioned here, and how would you implement that?
Not only would I favor public funding of campaigns, but on Tuesday morning in Sacramento, I'm going to be filing an initiative for public financing of campaigns in California. If I'm elected governor, this will be my first act as governor, proposing this to the legislature. I believe there are a lot of good people in the legislature who will come along if the leadership is there. But if they don't, my initiative will be ready and filed. And I will go across the state using the megaphone and the power of my office to make sure that this becomes the law of the land. Because nothing else is going to matter as much in terms of bringing back disaffected voters, the 13 million Californians who did not bother to vote in the last election.
All right, we go to our panel's first question, Chauncey Bailey, Solby TV.
Thank you, Neil. From East Oakland to South Los Angeles, the burning issue is unemployment. It is chronic. It is systemic. It's driven, as you know, by poor schools, crime rates. Ex-felons aren't hired. Redlining by banks, which discourages investment and welfare dependency. What is your answer to reduce the high rate of unemployment in urban communities, particularly among African Americans and other minorities?
60 seconds, Mr. Bustamante.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Bustamante.
Okay. First of all, I believe that there's a social compact in America, and that social compact stems from the time when I grew up with my father, who was a barber, and he provided for the six kids in a very tiny little community called San Joaquin. And I believe that it's the same issue in that tiny town as it is in urban areas. We're isolated. there's no economic development, and there's the social compact basically says if you work all week, you ought to be able to take care of your family and make sure that not worry about whether your child is sick. And so the social compact, I believe, because of the service industry in California has grown substantially, we need to make those good paying jobs that pay benefits.
60 seconds to Mr. Camillo.
The issue of unemployment, government has to take a certain responsibility in trying to stimulate and create jobs. One thing we need to do, what I've been presenting, is create a fair tax so we get rid of the deficit and rehire the teachers that we've laid off and the other people who've been laid off. But I think we need much more affordable housing in California, and that would be a major job creator. We need to have special programs to begin to lower the cost of housing for people. And I propose starting a crash program on renewable energy, which would generate jobs and create a whole new industry in California. And we presented a plan that would require $1 billion in capital, $1.5 billion in lines of credit or loan guarantees, a tiny amount compared to what we are spending in California that could make an enormous difference and generate large numbers of jobs.
60 seconds, Ms. Huffington.
First of all, we need to recognize that we don't have a level playing field. So we do need to actually reach out with tax credits, encouraging banks, encouraging companies investing in urban areas in every way the government can, encouraging private-public partnerships like Operation Hope, and making sure that this becomes a high priority. Right now, we are proceeding under the illusion that we have a level playing field, that we don't need affirmative action, that we do need Prop 54, as some people believe. Once we change that delusion, then as governor, I would actually go out of my way to encourage minority contracting and to encourage employment in the urban areas that are at the moment suffering.
Follow-up panel.
Well, I was going to bring this up later, but let me get it in now to make sure it gets answered. Mr. Bustamante, you said that every undocumented worker adds $1,400 to the economy here in California.
That's right.
It's been questioned up in San Francisco, where I'm from, that indeed they take $3,400 from the economy in terms of services. So, are people who are against undocumented workers are they economically short-sighted? Are they racist or both?
Well, I think that you have to refer to. I grew up in a town on the west side in the Central Valley. I saw 70% of all the workers who came through there were immigrant workers. I saw what they did was the kind of work that nobody else would do. And so whether they're doing farm work or hotel work or janitors, they're doing the work that no one else will do. And the independent Little Hoover Commission, a bipartisan commission, the beginning of this year, came out with a report that basically said they work hard and they pay $1,400 more in taxes than they receive in any kind of benefits.
Time.
So whoever said or questioned it just is plain wrong.
Panel, follow up. Gabriel.
To Mr. Camejo. Mr. Uberov, I'm sorry, in the first debate stressed the need for jobs, and talked about the danger of businesses leaving California. And he is very, very aware of that problem. How do you respond to that?
We are 36th in the nation in property taxes. So that if they want to leave for lower property taxes, they have hardly any place to go. If they go to a Republican-run state like Wyoming or Utah or Arizona, they actually have higher taxes than we do in California. We're 20th in the nation. This is a myth that corporations are leaving California because we are overtaxing them. It's the exact opposite. Taxes for corporations have dropped from 9.6% of their income to 5.3% over the last 16 years. This is a myth to try to get the people to accept higher taxes than what the wealthy are paying, and they want further and further rights for corporations to maximize their profits, which have been at record levels and over the last 10 years. We have a record GDP. This issue is a fake and a fraud.
Thank you, Mr. Camillo. We go to our next questioner, Jay Sheik, China Crosstalk, KTSF. Jay.
Thanks, Emil. What do you think is the biggest problem California is facing under the leadership of Governor Davis? And how would you rectify it if you were elected governor? 60 seconds, Mr. Bustamante.
Well, I'm not going to criticize any of the candidates. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say what I think ought to take place, and I'm going to rephrase your question in that way. I believe that one of the biggest problems that we have in California today is this budget problem. It is a mess that's been created, I believe, as a result of the energy terrorists who basically stole $10 to $15 billion from our budget. They interrupted our cash flow. They made sure that the ratepayers, the taxpayers, not only paid excessive rates, but they also now are requiring us to pay additional excessive rates, and on top of that, pay the bonds to make the payments. So they have basically taken so much money out of our economy that we've been unable to close the budget hole, restore education funding. We've had to triple our car tax. We've had to do so many things in terms of cutting back on many programs that are absolutely necessary. The first thing we would do is to make sure that we resolve this issue of the budget gap.
Thank you, Mr. Camejo. 60 seconds.
There have been fiscal irresponsibility. Over the last 5 years, California had the highest income it has ever had in its general fund. The growth rate was spectacular. Money poured into the state, and yet we ended up with a deficit. We do have to be fiscally responsible. And that is, if we're going to increase expenditures, we have to know where we're going to get it from. Part of the problem is we keep lowering the taxes on the wealthy and on corporations. The richest 5%, who gained 113% in their income over the last 10 years, who got the bulk of all the gains in California, their taxes are the lowest in California, and theirs have been lowered. So we have, on one hand, not been careful with the way money was spent, and on top of that, we have cut the sources that are necessary for the state of California.
60 seconds, Ms. Huffington.
The way my way of governing would be dramatically different from Governor Davis's is, first of all, I would not spend one waking hour, and no sleeping hours either, fundraising. So my absolutely total attention would be devoted to the problems of the state. Therefore, I would have seen the energy crisis coming before the iceberg hit the Titanic. And also, I would take on the Bush administration in the way Governor Davis has failed to do. Right now, for example, where is Governor Davis? And where are the other candidates arguing that it is absolutely irresponsible for President Bush to be asking for $87 billion additional money to fight the quagmire that war in Iraq has become? This is money that should be going to the states that are suffering. This is money that California desperately needs. Instead, what we are getting is unfunded mandates for education, for homeland security, for Head Start. I would fight that as governor.
Thank you, Ms. Huffington. Follow-up, Jay.
Basically, from what I heard, that is the physical and the finance problem that the state of California is facing. All three of you described as the most serious problem California is having. Having said that, what makes you think, let me put it this way, what is Governor Davis doing, or he's not doing, that you're going to be doing once you're elected governor? In other words, how you're going to do better than Governor Davis?
And this is directed
to Bustamante, please.
Mr. Bustamante.
I'm the only candidate that has presented a comprehensive plan to resolve the budget crisis. The comprehensive plan basically elevated the upper income tax brackets. It has closed corporate loopholes. It raised alcohol and tobacco taxes. It restored the funding for education, restored the funding for community colleges. It made sure that we provided a cut on the car tax, which I believe is an unfair burden on working families. And we've tried to make sure that we set priorities so that health care, as well as Medi-Cal fraud, are addressed.
Time.
Also supported SB2, which will provide 5 million workers in California health care.
All right. Follow-up, Odette Keeling.
This question is for Ms. Huffington. I want to jump into a burning issue that touches and affects ethnic communities, and that's Prop 54. since the proponents of Prop 54 stress that there are exemptions for health care services or concerns, do you think that this ban on racial data collection still hurts all other aspects of life for ethnic communities, education, housing, employment? Do you think there will ever be a compromise whereby California can be colorblind and yet will respect the importance of research into the different communities?
30 seconds, Ms. Huffington.
Absolutely. I hope there will be a day when California will be colorblind, but that day has not arrived. And until it arrives, we have to be passionately opposed to Prop 54. It is nothing more and nothing less than racial discrimination without leaving a paper trail. It is bad for health care, bad for education, bad for public policy.
Thank you, Ms. Huffington. Our next round of questions comes from Rolando Nichols, Univision.
My question is regarding the driver's license issue. There is a referendum being introduced by Republicans that is, the intention is to stop SB 60 from becoming a law. And they, if they get enough signatures from now until December 7, SB 60 will go into a general election in March of next year. How would you fight this referendum? Can you fight it? Would you fight it if you become governor?
60 seconds, Mr. Bustamante.
Yes, I would. Not only would I fight it, I was very supportive of SB 60 and was able to bring a tremendous number of folks, including the insurance industries, to come to bear in helping with this particular proposal. It was an important issue to bring all folks, activists and business together, to be able to provide credibility. I was in those communities where people who are doing the kind of work are paying taxes. I think overall that the people of the state of California believe one thing for sure about this issue, is that people who work hard and people who pay taxes ought to be able to have a driver's license to be able to go to work and do the work that most of us are unwilling to do.
60 seconds, Mr. Camille.
I agree with Cruz on this. We would fight it all the way, but I'd like to remind Cruz that it was the Democratic Party that proposed to take away the driver's license from the undocumented. And it was a representative from here, from Los Angeles, Caldera, who presented the motion in the assembly. We need to make a clear and unambiguous stand that the immigrants who are here, who have been brought here, actually, by the powers to be, by the Democratic and Republican Party and the corporate world, they want them here. No one in their rational mind is proposing having them leave here, be thrown out of the United States. We need to give total rights, equal rights to them. We need to legalize their status, and we stop confusing the issue of the people that are here working, part of our family in California, with the issue of immigration, which, are, though they're interrelated, they're not the same. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is clearly presenting a racist position when he opposes this group of immigrants.
Time. And you can clear your sentence.
Yes, when he opposes this group of immigrants and shows the depth of the prejudice that he really has towards the Latino community with his support of 187 in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Camille. Ms. Huffington, 60 seconds to you.
No issue shows more clearly where the Republican candidates really stand than where they are on the driver's license issue. And they are all unanimously against it. And that shows, together with their absence from this forum today, what they really think of minorities. You know, basically, Republican candidates, whether it's Schwarzenegger, McClintock, or George Bush, really, really like minorities 1 week out of every 4 years during their conventions. That's when they want them prominently displayed on the stage, not in the audience where they can ask embarrassing questions, but this is their definition of a big tent. And their absence from this debate today and their stance on the driver's license should leave you in no doubt as to whose side they are on.
Thank you. Follow-up question, Rolando Nichols.
My follow-up question is, Mrs. Huffington, I know that as governor, federal immigration law is pretty much out of your hands, but all the residents of the state of California will be your responsibility, and among them is about 2 million undocumented people. What would you do with those people to keep California from becoming a house divided between first-class citizens and second-class citizens?
Well, first of all, let me just say that I do not agree that federal law is not part of